Sims for yet another outstanding breakfast. The schus of all the brachas and the learning and the discussion of Torah should be refuah shlema for Yitzchak ben Ruchama, Esther bas Ruchama, and Chana bas Sara. Okay, so the halachas we're learning are the halachas of Genevas Das. Genevas Das is defined as profiting or benefiting through another person being misled. We'll see more what that means. Now, according to many Rishonim, or Tva amongst them, that was in the packet, Ganeva's Das, tricking people, is actually a forbidden daraisa. It's a Torah prohibition. Learn from Lo Signovu, from stealing. It's really a form of stealing, even though you're not taking any financial anything, you're not taking any property from anybody. All you're doing is tricking somebody or misleading them. It's considered a form of stealing. Others, like the Smak, say that it's a derabanan. But everyone agrees it's forbidden. It's just a question if it's deraisa or derabanan. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah points out, and this is an important distinction, that the problem with Ganeves Das is the sheker, it's the lie of it, the trickery and the lie of it. It's not because you're stealing any property. So the trickery is a problem even if there's no financial loss involved. So we'll see, for example, if you're charging less appropriately, you're misleading as to what you're selling, but you're lowered the price accordingly. So you're not overcharging really for what you're selling, but the fact that the person thinks he's getting one thing, he's really getting something else, that itself is the problem, even though there's no financial loss. It's the trickery and the sheker of it. Many Rishonim hold that it applies to gifts, not just to sales. So if somebody thinks they're getting as a gift one thing and it's really something else, it's also a problem. They also point out that it applies to even for a mitzvah. So you can't. It's not something that can be justified that for a mitzvah purpose I could do it. It's forbidden. So one example that's discussed is pledging tzedakah when you're making like a public pledge of tzedakah that you're really not planning on giving, so that other people will give. You know, you make an announcement, I'm giving $10,000, so that five other people will say, okay, I'm also going to give $10,000, and really you're not giving anything. You just did it so that they would give. So you're misleading people, besides the fact that you're causing them to give money they wouldn't give otherwise, but the trickery of it is a problem. Another case to discuss is if you have a shill, you have somebody join in an auction, and you make up with him ahead of time that whatever he bids, he only has to pay a small percentage of, just to drive up the auction. Again, it's a form of trickery, and there it is also causing a financial loss, but it's a form of trickery that's a problem. And now, in business, as it applies to business, and we'll see it applies beyond business, but as it applies to business.
To our auction chair, anybody wants to do that for that auction chair.
They could do that?
They're sucked by the president.
according to this, they'd actually have to pay whatever they pledge. Okay. It's usher to sell a defective item, even if you're not overcharging. So you have an item that's somehow damaged or not 100%, and you even if you lower the price, like we said earlier, even if you lower the price for what it's really worth, but if you don't tell people that there's something wrong with it, it's a problem. And the reason for that is because there's an automatic and proper assumption that when you go into a store and you buy something, that the thing you're getting is full quality, is something of a certain quality. And so because that's their assumption, and that should be their assumption, and you're giving them something other than that, so you're tricking them.
What if you're giving away for free?
Huh?
What if you're giving something away for free?
That's according to many Rishonim, I guess it's like a gift. It's still a problem. If you're giving them the impression that what you're giving them is perfect. Now, I don't know if you're giving something away for free is necessarily that assumption, but it could be often that it is the case in a store. There is that assumption that it's perfect. If you have a yard sale and you give someone, there's no assumption that it's perfect. But in a store, people generally, so unless it's, we'll see more about it, but if it's like marked as defective goods or whatever, that's why you're giving it away, so then people understand that.
When you say as is, appears to be that?
Could be.
Is it suffice, basically, to say?
Probably. It comes down to very often, we'll see more about that, but it comes down to what people assume and what's the custom. So if as is should mean to people that there's something wrong with it, then that probably means that you've given them enough indication. Okay, so basically the rule is that any defect that a customer would have a right to assume isn't there, you have an obligation to let them know, even if they, miss it. If it's something that they shouldn't tell on their own, you have to point out to them. You should know that this has this and this problem. Now, if the price does fails to reflect that, if you don't lower the price accordingly, then besides tricking them, you're also stealing from them. That's a different category, but you're stealing their money. But here, this is just the trickery of it. This would also include diluting wine more than is customary, even if you didn't lie about it. Even if you don't, now it's hard, because everything we have is pretty much very labeled by regulation, but in situations where it's not required, diluting wine, milk, gasoline, I think is a pretty common practice, supposedly, where if you can skirt by the authorities and dilute product in a way that is more than the norm, it's a problem. It's an interesting story related. There was a story where there was a milkman in Yerushalayim that was dying on his deathbed, and before he passed away, he said, I need to ask Mechila, I've been diluting my milk for years. The only person that knew was Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, because there was a very poor widow who had like scraped together enough money for a little chicken for her family for Shabbos or something, and she spilled milk in the chicken, and it was too much milk to be kosher. But Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld suspected that the milk was diluted with water. So he went to the milkman, and he promised he wouldn't tell anyone. And he found out how much water was in the milk so that the almana could have her chicken. Okay. But it's a problem. If there's an assumption that things are diluted to a degree, then to whatever degree is normal, it's okay. Another example that the halacha discusses. I'm sorry. Now, interesting halacha, that you're not allowed to sell diluted wine to a merchant, to a retailer, to a reseller, even if you tell them, instead of to a customer, you could tell them, you should know, this is 20% water. But to a reseller, let's say you're a wholesaler, you're selling to them, you can't sell them diluted wine, the halacha says, because we're concerned that he'll go and resell it without telling anybody. And we'll see later, hopefully, some practical ramifications of that.
I think it says also Sfaradi over there, I'm not allowed to sell a diluted wine.
Another example that the halacha discusses is you're not allowed to sell a hide from an animal that died without being shechted, as under the portrayal that it's really a shechted. So, and the smat explains the halacha that because a hide that comes from a shechted animal is better quality than an animal that died of natural causes or whatever it is, or through an injury. So the poskim discussed that it's from the fact that the sma feels the necessity to explain that distinction. It appears from the sma that the only problem of misleading is where there's a significant or meaningful difference between them. It's, the sma felt the need to explain that it's actually better, implying that if people assume one way and there really is no difference between what they're assuming and what really is, it doesn't matter. It's not your problem that they have some thing in their head that's wrong, that they think one way or the other, if it really doesn't make a difference. It's only because there really is a difference. But Rav Moshe Feinstein's not totally sure about that. He entertains the possibility that the fact that a person has a false assumption, meaningful or not, is a problem.
So would that be Geneva's das? Or one question we asked is, would that be Geneva and Mamish?
Well, again, anytime when we're talking about Geneva's das, we're always assuming that the price reflects the actual quality. Right. Anytime you're overcharging, then it's stealing. But however you're pricing it reflects the actual quality, and it's just that they think that for their low price they're getting something better. Okay. Another case that's discussed in halacha, another issue that we saw in the Gemara and halacha, is that you're not allowed to portray your merchandise as being better than it actually is. So you can't dress it up to make it look newer or younger than it is. Like the case the Gemara talks about is you have an old slave and you dye his hair black to make him look younger than he is. So again, even if you're not overcharging for him, but the guy thinks, the buyer thinks he's getting a young man and he's really getting somebody older, then it's a problem.
Or a temp.
Huh?
It could be a temp.
Right. we'll see. Not necessarily. Raisha talks about that.
Does this apply when you buy, when you get like generic medication over like brand name medication? When you like go to the pharmacy and the doc gives you a script and they just give you generic, and it says generic on there, and there could be no difference, but you have in mind that maybe there is a difference between the brand name and the generic medication, and they're just giving you for cheaper.
I don't know if you have a right to assume that. That might have to do with maybe. I don't know. To ask,
I mean, they know. They write it on the thing that's generic.
Right,
so you
but
know
I'm
that
saying, like, if you have
generic
in mind that, oh, maybe it's generic, it's not as good. Like, you have that thing in your mind that
they're telling you. So
you know what you're getting. You're buying the generic.
You're paying generic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talking about this very company here.
It's Or Amiti, Amiti, Amiti. It says it right on the belt. Okay. The Sma writes that if the practice is prevalent, and customers are aware, so it's fine. So if there's some kind of misleading packaging, but it's something everybody does, it's okay. But the Aruch HaShulchan quotes that opinion that it's okay, and he says still you should stay away from it. It's misleading, but and people know that this is something that's done, but he says that Shomer Nafsho you should avoid doing that because maybe somebody won't know. Okay, now interesting about the temp. So Moshe Feinstein differentiates between a slave. A slave is a long-term relationship. You buy him for life. So if you think you're getting a 30-year-old, and really you're getting an 80-year-old, right? So then it's a really bad deal because you thought you had, you know, 70 years of labor out of him, and really you don't. But he says if you're hiring a worker to do a job, so Ramesha says that as long as he's physically able to do the labor or whatever job you're hiring him for, as well as somebody younger than him, and you know the idea that the person hiring only wants somebody young as opposed to old is something that doesn't make sense in terms of exactly what the job description is, and I can do that job just as well as somebody younger. There's no detriment to the fact that I'm older, so then you're allowed to color the hair. Another distinction that he makes is there's a difference between giving a misleading impression, like making him look black-haired as opposed to white-haired, and hiding red flags. So you can actually shave his head to hide his gray hair, because you're not portraying him as younger. You're just removing you're hiding the red flags. That's not a problem. Another case he discusses is soaking liver and blood to make it look fresher. The way it works is that if you don't soak it and it looks like pale, I guess, then it's clearly not fresh. But if you soak it and it looks red, still doesn't mean it's fresh. It might be fresh, it might not be fresh. Sometimes fresh meat is red like that. So the fact that it looks red just doesn't makes it unobvious now that it's not fresh. But no one has a right to assume it's fresh because it's red. If you know what you're talking about, then you have to ask even then. So again, all you're doing is removing a blatant indication that something's up here, but you're not putting forth any impression that's misleading.
So what was it, Rav Moshe's tshuva that you have pointed over there when he said you can actually, in an interview, you can appeal to be look dressed nicely, look, I mean, you can allow to dye your head to be able to get to that job.
Right. That's only where you could perform the job as well as somebody younger. That's only in that case, right? The job is sharpening pencils. It doesn't really matter if you're 20 or 70, right? You can sharpen pencils the same. Now, the fact that he has in his head he wants to hire a 20-year-old to sharpen pencils, if there is no reason, and that's assuming there's no reason to do that, then, you know, he's just like, people have like a thing about hiring somebody older. So then, you don't have, it's not misleading him.
What about the rabbi? Is he allowed to dye his hair gray to look older?
To give away all the secrets.
So there are those that say that even if you tell the person explicitly that what you've done is dyed the hair, it's still a problem. Even if you tell them, but if there's something misleading about it, we saw like a little bit. I think that's connected to the Tosfos Yontif we'll get back to, but sometimes even when you tell people what's going on, but if what meets the eye is very misleading, that may supersede what you've told them even. Another case that's discussed in the Gemara and Halacha is you can't mix higher quality products and lower quality products in a way that will mislead people into thinking the whole thing is really higher quality. Merchants, though, in contrast to farmers, merchants buy from various farmers. Farmers are assumed that all their crop, let's say, comes from one field. It's one certain homogeneous uniform quality. So you can't mix in other things because people assume that all the stuff's going to be that quality. A merchant, everybody knows that merchants buy from various farmers, so there's always an assumption that their product is a combination of various things. So with them, it's okay, but the halakha points out that you shouldn't specifically do it in a way with the intention or do it in a way that will be intentionally misleading. He can do his normal way of doing business, of mixing various products together or various sources together, but he shouldn't like do it try to be misleading and throw people off as to what they're getting. Another thing that's discussed is you can't improve the top layer of a container of something, or the front of something, the facade, in order to give the impression that the whole contents is really of a higher quality than it is. Now, Tosis Yantiv, that's quoted in the sources, says that's true, even if you tell them. So, even if you tell people, let's say you have the cases, you have a barrel full of nuts, let's say, or beans or something, or grain, and there's chaff and things. So, if you can't take out the shells from the top layer and have the rest full of chaff and shells, even if you tell them, only the top layer was cleaned out. So, the principle that's derived from this Tosfos Yantiv is that even if you tell people something, but the human psychology is sometimes that they're still swayed by what they see. So they may not take your warning to heart. You're telling them that you didn't pick the whole thing out, but they look at it and they see it looks good to me, and they may still make a false, operate under false assumptions.
Even if the price is lower or it's less than the chef in the bottom of the can,
yeah, it's yeah. Right, according to the Tosafot, because at the end of the day, you've set up a misleading. You're giving people in their psychology an impression that this is a certain thing, and it's really not. Even if you told them, but they're still, in some level, they're still impressed by what they see.
So when you pay the same $4.99 for ketchup you've always paid, but the bottle is now not 8 ounces, but 6 ounces, and you figure that out when you hold it at home and try to squeeze it, that's the name of the ketchup
company. Okay, usually it'll say on it, so... So it depends how it's packaged.
Even if you tell them, it's still a problem.
Huh?
Even if you tell them, it's still a problem.
Well, there, it says 6 ounces.
Does it differentiate because it's a measure versus a quality visual appearance?
You can't see that it...
The drops make 8 to 7 ounces. It's only 1 ounce less. It's definitely labeled that you can see the 7 ounces, but... And the price is the same. So
the difference over there...
just didn't really notice it.
The difference over here is that in the case where we're doing the facade is I'm telling them what I did, but I'm not telling them what product they're getting. In a case where they label I'm getting 7 ounces, I should read and see that I'm only getting 7 ounces. Over here, I didn't tell them what product I'm giving. I just told them I did something to make it look better. But at the end of the day, they're still going to think that it looks better. And therefore, they're going to think the whole thing looks better. If I tell them exactly what they're going to get, then they're crazy for not believing me.
It's qualitative.
Right, probably. Now, Rav Moshe explains that a little differently. Rav Moshe understands that the problem with picking out the top layer is that you attract them to the product under a false pretense. So at the end of the day, even if they know and totally realize what they're getting, but you cultivated the interest in the sale through a false pretense. And according to Rav Moshe, the practice of bait and switch advertising, where you advertise some exciting deal or something like that, which is non-existent, basically, that you don't have any in stock. And it's just like a means to get them in the door, and then once they're in the door, you try to sell them on whatever. So, and it's all under a false pretense, not like a loss leader, but it's a false pretense. So then that would be a problem. Anytime you engage them through falsehood, it's a problem. Another case that the Halacha discusses is mixing hard and soft wine, whatever that is. And the Gemara says it's okay because the various properties, one tastes better, one lasts longer, and they improve each other through being mixed together, and that's okay. If the custom is to taste the wine, so that's discussed in halacha, then no matter what is fine, because then a person knows what they're getting. So from there, there's a principle that any time that the state of the goods should be obvious based on prevalent practices, it's fine. So if the minig is to test drive a used car or something like that, and it makes a loud noise when you drive it, so then the guy is supposed to know that it's his problem. That makes a loud noise. You know, if it's something that he can't tell, he can't tell. But if it's something that people test drive or use or taste or whatever it is, and through that it should be obvious what they're getting, then it's fine. That's all considered like it's on the table. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's as far as business is concerned. Now, shidduchim. Okay, I don't want to get too much into specifics because it's a sensitive topic, but basically in shidduchim, a person has to, you have to ask shaylos with these things, but a person has to reveal any... This is the person themselves, has to reveal any negative factor that people are particular about. This is talking about the spouse themselves, the girl or the boy. They're like the salesman. They're selling themselves, so to speak. They're portraying themselves a certain way. So if medical conditions, fertility issues, the post can talk about yichus issues. I have to ask a shayla. These are complicated topics. But if there are certain things that are not apparent to the eye that are things that people care about, you have an obligation to reveal them. It's misleading if you're the person. Now, the friends and family who aren't the actual boy or girl that are looking to get married, they don't. It's not stealing for them. It's not misleading, unless they say something misleading. But if they watch, if they know of a condition and they don't, that's relevant, and they don't say it, then the post can say that it's lo sam al dam riecha. There is it's not misleading anybody, but there is an obligation to not stand on your friend's blood. There's an obligation that if someone's about to make a grave error, you have to stop them, and that would apply here. Again, the Chafetz Chaim speaks at length about what you can say, what you have to say, what you could say even without being what you should say even if you're not asked about it. Complicated, it has to be looked into.
What about the shachrim?
Huh?
Would the shachrim be like the sozo?
I don't know, it could be.
Yeah, sure.
Probably, yeah. The Tzitz Eliezer says that that a doctor, his obligation to reveal a relevant medical condition supersedes his duty of confidentiality to the patient. So if he knows that a person has some serious medical condition that's relevant and no one's saying anything, and the patient isn't saying anything, he has an obligation to let the potential spouse know about the issue.
How could he be saying question if he's doesn't keep?
Well, this is halachically his halachic obligation to like
his position.
Huh? I don't know.
You tell them to look at. That's what they usually do. Say, look, if I were you, I'd do some more research. I can't talk to you. But.
He's discussing his halachic obligation of.
Will the halacha tell him to abuse his job?
I don't know.
Abusing his job.
It loses parnasa. That's got to be part of it also.
It certainly affects it. That's Kashana. The Rebbe is saying that there's a way to sell both. But if there wasn't, it's an interesting point. If you have a halachic obligation to say something. Losing your parnasa doesn't necessarily.
No, but they shouldn't be in that profession if he's going to have to. In the other sense, he's doing Gnevis Das to his patients.
What do you say?
Why is that Gnevis Das to his patients?
He's saying it's not. Maybe it's not Gnevis Das because there's. The halacha is that your obligation to let people know takes precedence over that.
Does he inform them about that? Because there's all.
I don't know if that's called.
It's interesting. They just, I don't know the exact details, but they recently changed the laws for even psychologists, psychiatrists, with a certain waiver that you have to, when you're coming in, you have to actually waiver. And it's exactly. I doubt that it's exactly halacha, but it's exactly about these type of situations where you'd have a situation where the therapist has to. Let's say someone says they're going to murder their wife.
Right.
So what's supposed to be your therapist? You're not allowed to say that they're going to murder their wife if they're talking to you. On the other hand, the wife's going to get murdered tomorrow night.
If someone else is in danger, it's totally different than if someone
defects. Well, no, but that's where. So where do you draw the line for danger? That would be the question. I don't know if halacha and American law. What I'm saying is there's a mechanism for it.
Marry someone with a mental disorder, it's also dangerous.
All right. Hashal has to be asked for these particulars. It's obviously very very sensitive and very and all sides. It's very touchy. Okay. In principle, anyway, there is an obligation on this doctor to not allow this to take place because of some of the Amriecha. Now, how that plays out with the various halachically that supersedes the halachic requirement to maintain confidentiality. How that works with the legal obligation of patient, sorry, right. So that you have to speak to her up. Okay. Now it also applies to this idea of Gnevis Das. Also applies to favors outside of business entirely. Having somebody causing or allowing somebody really to feel gratitude towards you that's undeserved is a form of Gnevis Das. An example of this that the Gemara talks about is if you open a new barrel of wine. So a barrel of wine will go bad after it's opened. Now, if you open a barrel of wine in front of somebody to give them a cup of wine, and really you opened it because you've already have a buyer for the whole barrel. You're a merchant. You're selling it to a retailer. You already have a buyer, so it's not going to go bad. You're going to give them a cup, and then you go sell the rest to the retailer. But the person you're opening it for thinks that you're wasting a whole barrel of wine just to give him a fresh cup, so you're giving him a false impression a false sense of gratitude to you that's undeserved, you have an obligation to tell them that, you know, I'm opening this because I have a buyer. Okay. Now, even though the Torah attaches great value to achdos and Jews loving each other, but it has to be built on truth. So when those good feelings are engendered by falsehood, it's something that's not good.
Could you fix it? Meaning you open it and you let him think it for a few minutes, and then during the conversation, he's like, oh, you should know that this is actually, you know, oh, this wine tastes so good, you know, I'm glad I'm selling it.
Well, you're purposely waiting so he has
good friends with him. You lead him on at the beginning,
yeah.
Let him think, but are you fixing it? Is it, or were you over? Like, how does that work?
Oh.
Meaning,
as soon as possible. Yeah, I don't know.
You have to tell him beforehand, and you're ever gonna have his das for every minute that you don't.
Could be. I don't know. Interesting. Yeah, it could be. Probably. Okay. Now this is a little different than in the case of the sales. Now in the case of a sale, there's an assumption that what you're selling is good. That's like. It's like almost like you're, by selling it, you're stating it's good, which is a falsehood if it's not. Here, there's nothing you did specifically implies that that you're opening the barrel for that person. You're not making a statement to that effect. This is connected to a Gemara that was quoted in the sources. Gemara tells a story about one Amora who was walking one way and two Amoraim traveling from one city to the other, two Amoraim traveling the opposite direction, and they met each other on the road. And the one Amora assumed that they had come out to greet him. And he said, wow, you didn't have to come so far to greet me. And end of the day, Rabbi says that the proper course of action there is to not say a word. You don't have to correct his mistake. And Rava explains, the reason why you don't have to correct the mistake is because we didn't trick him, he tricked himself. We didn't mislead him, he tricked himself. So there's actually a disagreement in the Rishonim as to what that means. Rashi is a more lenient opinion. Rashi explains that he tricked himself because nothing we did indicated that we were there to greet him. So he made up this conclusion on his own. It's not our problem. It's only a problem of Gnevas Das when you do something that indicates the falsehood. Where he made it up on his own is not a problem. The Rush is more machmir. And the Rush says the reason why there he tricked himself is because he had no good reason to, he shouldn't have assumed. There was a bad assumption that they came to greet him because they had no idea he would be there. He didn't announce he was coming. So to assume that we came out to greet you when we have no way of knowing you would be there was a bad assumption. According to the Rush, any time it's a reasonable assumption that the person's doing something for you, even though nothing you did made any indication to that effect, they came out, they decided that on their own, it's still a problem, right? So it's a little bit more machmir. Therefore, you have an obligation to correct them. So again, even though nothing you did gave them that conclusion, as long as it's a reasonable conclusion to come to, and not a bad assumption, you have an obligation to correct their mistake.
How does Rashi fit with the barrel of wine?
It could be that when you open the barrel of wine in front of a person, it does clear the circumstances.
The Rush brings Rashi that he told him that Rashi holds that when you open the barrel, you're telling him.
You say it's for him. You. Okay, fair, sorry. Right, he has to say it. According to Rashi, he has to say it. According to the Rush, just the circumstances itself
right,
would be awesome.
And also the same thing with the guy sending the puzzle that's not remembered to the guy.
Right. You're saying it's regular.
Yeah, you send puzzle.
It could be that the meat in these cities was usually kosher, so they assumed it was. Menuker. There was a reasonable assumption that unless specified otherwise, it would be. Could be. Okay.
Can I interrupt? Sometimes this happens a lot, actually. You're in Lakewood or in Baltimore or something like that, and you hear somebody's making a wedding or they're making a bris or something, so you walk in, like, wow, you came all the way from Norfolk for my wedding, right? Or you came all the way for the bris, like, and you feel like the good midos thing is to say, yeah, you know, like, of course for you, but it could be a tusser. It could be you have to actually say, you know, no, I was here for a different reason instead.
Uh-huh.
If you actually would have, yeah.
Right. Okay. Another case that's discussed in Halacha and the Gemara is that you can't push repeatedly your friend to accept a gift or to accept an invitation to come to your house if only because you know that they really aren't going to accept the gift or they're not going to accept the invitation. unless of course you really mean it. But if you're only doing it because they're not going to accept it, then it's inappropriate, because again, you think you're making them think that you really want to do them a favor, you really want them to come, and that's false. The Sma says, Poskim say, that just to say it once or twice, that's basic decency. That if you don't say it, if you don't invite somebody, it's actually an insult to them. Somebody's around in those circumstances. Just once or twice is just to retain their dignity. They shouldn't be insulted. But if you go above and beyond that, and you push them and say, no, please, 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 and you give the impression that I'm not just being polite, but I'm being more than polite, I really, really want you, and you really don't, so then that's giving a false impression. Another case discussed is you can't offer somebody a drink from an empty bottle because you know that they won't accept it. Same thing. There it's a little bit more chomer. There you can't even do it once, because with an invitation, even if it's not genuine, even if it's not sincere, but it's a real offer, if they accept the invitation, you'll have them. It's just you don't really want them. So it's insincere. So there it's polite to do it once or twice. But to make an entirely false offer that's entirely false, you don't even have anything to give them, that's a problem. The halacha is, though, that if it's done in a public or done in a way to give honor to the person, you're offering them so that it'll build their esteem in the eyes of the people around them, or as an act of honor, not to engender false gratitude, but just to show respect to them and honor to them, then that's okay. The Rabbeinu Gershom, that's quoted in the sources, he adds a line, though, when he explains the halacha. He adds a line that he says, since you don't have the means to give it for real. So it sounds like from Rabbeinu Gershom that if you really have something to give, you have to give it. You can't have wine in that case. You can't have wine in your fridge and take out an empty bottle and offer the empty bottle because you don't want to give them your wine just to give them honor. If you have wine, you have to offer it for real. But if you have no wine and you still want to offer them something and as out of respect for them, you take out you have a chush of a guest come to your house, you put out a bottle of apple juice in a blue label bottle because you it's chush to put out scotch for them, even though you know they don't drink. So again, if it's for their honor, it's fine. But if you really have scotch, you put out the apple juice, it's a problem. Okay. Now, the halacha is, as mentioned, that according to the Rush, that if the recipients should have understood on their own that it wasn't for them, then it's not your job to tell them. And the opposite, it could be you shouldn't tell them, because like the Poskim say that, like Gemara sounds like this, that it'll embarrass him, it'll make him feel bad he came to a conclusion. You don't have an obligation to correct them because it was a false conclusion. But by correcting him, you'll embarrass him. So it could be you really shouldn't tell him. One last halacha, that if you hear undeserved praise about you and it's not true, so again, you have an obligation to correct it, because being quiet implies that it's true. So someone praises you, you did this, you did that, you did the other thing, and you didn't really do it, you have to correct it, because you can't give the false impression that it's true. All right. So now some practical cases. So one case they discussed are overinflated bags of chips and things like that. And I would add also, like, sometimes cans and bottles are like weighted. They have like thick bottoms, or they're made to weigh heavy, so they feel like there's more in there than there really is. So so they say that, some say that according to the Sma, since that's the prevalent practice, it's just assumed and it's not a problem. The Aruch HaShulchan did say that it's better to avoid that. I'm pretty sure that the reason why they blow up the bags of chips is so they don't get smushed. So I'm not sure if that's the intention there is to mislead you. It's just to protect the product. Yeah?
And also keep them fresh. They put like gas in the chips so they don't decompose. They stay
Okay. So my understanding is that anyway is not a problem. Okay.
It's labeled, right? It says 8 ounces or
whatever. Right. The thing is, people don't know what 8 ounces is.
You don't know how much 8 ounces it is.
Right.
That was my question.
I know, but the ketchup, you know, like regular ketchup is 9, and this is less than that. You know, you're getting less.
You missed the premise of his saying ketchup. He's saying that for years he's been buying ketchup that's 8 ounces, right?
Yeah.
He goes and picks up the exact same bottle, made it the same thickness. They made the bottle thicker.
Yeah.
And now on the bottom it says 7 ounces.
But if it's intentionally in small letters that you're going to miss, that's true, 100%. I think it's a problem. Huh?
Like those Pesach cereals. They have them like the full size of the regular cereals.
Right.
And you open it up, there's like a little Ziploc bag in there.
It's a good Shiloh. It's a good Shiloh. But if the contents is either not obvious or it's like a number that's meaningless to people because you don't know what to compare it to, and the packaging is in a misleading way, then it may be a problem. Mostly if that's your intention. It could be, again, if they make the cereal boxes that size because that's how it fits in the package. If there's a reason why they do it that way, maybe it's less of an issue. I don't know. But if it's just to throw you off, for sure, it might be a problem. Okay. We discussed Rav Moshe's dying hair for job interviews. Now, the case of the wine, but mixing the wines. So we said that you can mix the wines because even though it's lower quality, it's better, not as good tasting, but it improves the quality of the product. So that would apply to like putting in preservatives and all kinds of chemicals and things into food that maybe is not as diminishes the volume. It diminishes maybe the healthiness of the food, but it's something that improves the quality of the food overall. You're adding something that's not there. You're getting whatever, but it's any product, but included in that product, there are all these additives. Those additives are there to improve the product, so it's okay. That's all assuming that it's something that's universally considered good, basically universally considered a good thing, or it's obvious that it's there. If you have something that you add that people won't necessarily be thrilled about, and it's not obvious, you have these, I don't know, genetically modified stuff, and maybe a significant part of the population thinks that genetically modified stuff is bad for you, or they're nervous about it, and you don't tell anybody, and I think it has to say it on the package, but if you're misleading people, something like that, then it's a problem. interesting case, irregulars, right? So manufacturers have like products that don't come out right, I guess. And they sell them to stores, and they're called irregulars. You have like a bed sheet that's sewed funny or something like that, and it works, and stores sell it usually cheap. Hopefully, they sell it cheaper than the regular stuff. So we learned the halacha that you're not allowed to sell diluted wine to a merchant because we're afraid he'll resell it at full price. So this would apparently fall under that category. You can't, as a manufacturer, you can't sell defective products to a retailer unless it's marked on the product, because we should have this fear that the reseller will go resell it as regular, proper, without properly adjusting the price.
So something that comes up at work a lot, I don't know if it's necessarily, so basically you have we do dimensional inspection on parts, and you have a 100% inspection plan, you have to check certain things, and then the way we check certain things, you overcheck and you get more information than you're actually obligated to give. And what if like one of those things is, the way one of those dimensions is out, you're not required to actually check it, but you know it's out, but it's not on the inspection plan that you gave the customer. Are you still obligated to tell the customer, oh, I found this certain thing that's out, but it wasn't on our original, we didn't agree to check this certain point, but it's out. Are you obligated to tell someone in that case when you actually get more information than you're required to give?
I would assume so, assuming it affects the product.
That's why SpaceX just blew up.
It wasn't our part. It's possible. There's a lot. It happens a lot you're doing 100% inspection on something, but in essence, you're only checking certain things when
you know your product's defective. The fact that they did a bad job preparing an inspection list. Fact is, you know that you're selling a product that's not, and they assume, I think they assume that they're getting a perfect product. If there's an assumption that you're getting your checklist perfect and everything else could be way off,
right?
Which is a funny assumption, but if there is, then
yeah, I mean, sometimes there's no way to check 100%, but you have to. But there's certain
things. If you know that the products, they're buying something on the assumption it's going to work properly, and if you know that there's something wrong with it, I think you have an obligation to tell them.
That's not a checklist that you've received from your client. The client gave you check 1 through 10.
Yeah.
Number 11, 12 is not on the list. That's what you discovered. You have an obligation to tell them because that's not in their standard of requirements.
If they're not checking it because it doesn't matter, then...
Well, that's the thing. It might not matter.
If it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter.
In the first place.
Right.
Yeah. If they just don't know about the product enough to know to check 11 or 12...
Right. So the fact that they didn't realize they need to know this, but they do need to know. Like, you're selling them...
We're
trying to get a perfect brand.
That's
Gnevas Das. It's Gnevas Das, no?
Why? Could be. They actually check 1 through 10.
Yeah.
Said 1 through 10 is 1.
But they're
selling someone else's stuff.
I think they assume that the product, that if the checklist is good, they assume the product is perfect to the best of your knowledge, at least.
It is.
see some specifications that they want. That's what I need.
You're talking about
it depends what the case. If the specifications require more, and they did a bad job preparing their list, but you happen to know that the product. Right. Okay. It would depend on the circumstances. Okay. Another example. Another case. Interesting thing to talk about is that. What if you have a high-end store? You have, I don't know, I'm not so good at this, but you have Nordstrom, I don't know. You have some high-end store. Maybe that's a bad example.
Kmart.
Right. And like, they throw in the mix there, like, some lower-quality item in their store, on their racks. They have something there that's lower quality than the regular stuff. So is that okay or not? So want to compare that to like the discussion of a farmer, where the halacha is that since the assumption is when you buy from a farmer that you see one thing, you assume the whole thing is uniform quality. If there's an assumption that when you walk into some boutique store that everything here is high-end, you know, top-of-the-top stuff, and thrown in on the rack somewhere is some junky whatever, or some even the fancy brands have different lines. So, and this is beneath the standard of this store. So someone to compare it to that case with a farmer where there's an impression to the consumer that everything here is good, and by getting this, they're getting something less than what they're expecting.
Would that be true if it's marked, you know, Dollar Tree?
Assuming it's obvious that that's junk, yeah. Right. Dollar Tree would be a giveaway. right. But it's not always so clear, right? You have all, some of these designers have different lines, and you don't necessarily know. I mean, maybe for shopping there, you know, but... okay. Now, another case. Sometimes you have, like, disclosures that different companies give, but they're very easily misunderstood. You see that with medications and financial products. They have, like, you know, this will save your life, da-da-da-da-da, and then they, in, like, rapid... low over undertones, they say, you know, this doesn't work and it kills you and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? Or many things like that. Right, so even though you've disclosed it, but this may be comparable, someone to compare it to the Tosfos Yontiv, where even though you told them that the top layer was clean, you told them exactly what happened. You told them exactly the truth. The fact is that the circumstances as portrayed are still misleading. Again, if they listen to you, as they should, they wouldn't buy it, maybe, or they would think twice, right? But the fact is, according to the Tosfos Yontiv, that there's a disconnect between what you've told them and what, and the way people react to the portrayal. You've still given them something. The eye candy looks really nice. So if you give this portrayal of your product, or you intentionally cause them to get confused by what they see, it's still potentially a problem. Also, in that category would be confusing accounting practices, where you could have accounting sheets that are 100%. Truthful, but they are laid out in a way that are confusing and lay things out in a way that are meant to lead people to the wrong conclusion. And again, same problem. Even though you're being forthright and truthful, but if you're doing it in a way that will cause people to come to the wrong conclusion, it's still a problem.
So it's essentially all patents right now. They write patents in such a way that's so confusing that someone reading it gets so confused they don't know what they're actually getting is actually a new patent or not.
In the patent office, it's confused.
Yeah, like, but they're getting a new patent. They're just doing it in a way that it's so the language is like, you look at patents from 67 years ago, they're much more simplistic than they are now because they just mix up the jargon.
Right. So if you're intentionally getting them to give you a patent on something that you shouldn't be able to get it on. Assuming that's the case, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be a problem. Okay, so there's a case that someone discussed. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but there's a commercial or an advertisement that compares Tylenol to Orajel. And it says, I think the way it works is that it makes you seem like you're being cruel to your child by giving him Tylenol because it takes so long to work. Give your kid Orajel and it works in minutes. But they neglect to mention the fact that the Orajel wears off in like 2 minutes and the Tylenol works for extended amount of time. So somebody wanted to say that you're misleading the customer by thinking that it's better for the kid to do this. So I'm not sure that's true. You're emphasizing a true point. It works faster. Go figure out how long it lasts. You do both. I don't know. But something to think about, that kind of case where you're making the advertisement kind of picks out certain details and maybe gives an overall confusing impression. the Tzitz Eliezer was asked about publishing in like a medical journal a study with basically false information, or you doctor the numbers in a way that it doesn't hurt anybody. It just builds the prestige of the doctor that publishes it. So you're not selling anything. You're not doing anything that actually harms anybody, but you build up your esteem in the field falsely. So he says it's because of Rabbeinu Yonah, who spoke out, that it has nothing to do with stealing or harming anybody. The problem with Ganeves Das is that you're creating sheker, you're creating a false impression. So building yourself up falsely is a problem. Another interesting case that's discussed is selling meat. There are certain issues with meat that it's us that certain leniencies in kashrus that we have for financial loss. So let's say an animal, there's something wrong. There are certain practices that they have with closing up the holes in the lungs and things like that that are only permissible because if you don't do it, the butcher will lose a lot of money. So do you have to tell the consumer that? I mean, he's not losing a lot of money. He probably would rather have top-notch kosher meat. Doesn't necessarily need your leniencies that you're relying on because you're going to have a financial loss. Are you obligated to tell the consumer that we're relying on leniencies? It's clearly it's okay for them, but it's only because of pressing circumstances. You have to tell them that. So it's a big machlokas in the postgame about that.
I thought we said you can't do that with like the middleman supplier because they might sell it as if it's completely kosher. There's nothing wrong.
Well, let's say you're the retailer, you're the butcher, and the consumer comes in, the customer comes in. You have to tell them, you know, this shelf is meat that's, you know, it's good. I mean, I'm allowed to sell it. You're allowed to eat it, as the post can point out, right? But okay, so that's a big discussion, interesting discussion. What about the use of loss leaders and fancy displays and things like that? You bring people into a store, you give them a really good deal on a product for real, a good deal on a product, just so you can get them in the store, and then you try to sell them other things at full price. Or you dress up fancy displays and you have lights and mirrors and all kinds of things to make the product more flashy and attractive. So it's fine. I mean, halacha is it's fine, it's clear. There's a really Gemara that talks about that pretty much. It's fine. You're not giving any false impressions about the actual product. All these methods of getting people to do things is fine. Another case that's discussed is implying that a product is from a certain place that's assumed to be better, Swiss watches or things like that. So, and it's not really from there. So it's a problem. Since people, when they hear that, or assume that it's better, and it's not really that, so it's a problem. An example I thought of that was made in the USA. So there are certain laws about what has to be done in the USA to be made in the USA. So you can have something that's potentially made in China, you know, garbage, who knows what, but there's laws about it, but a certain amount was done in the United States, and you can write made in the USA. So if that gives a false impression as to the quality of the product, when really, if it does, I don't know that it does, then it's a problem. I'm not sure. If people have a certain impression, if people aren't aware of the technicalities of the law, I don't know. Maybe it's possible that it's still false. I don't know.
What about made in Italy suits?
Yeah.
It's assumed that Italian suits are very high end, but this guy found a junk manufacturer in Italy who makes junk.
Right.
He writes made in Italy on the suits.
Okay, that's a good question.
But if it's really made in Italy.
But if the assumption is from people that because that it's high end,
could be that's not a reasonable assumption that they should have. Maybe that's you that Mati Anafshe. Another example I thought, and if you call whiskey made in America Scotch, well, legally you're not allowed to do that. But if you call it Scotch, as we made in Scotland. So if people assume that it's made in Scotland, that makes it better. Then similar problem. I think that's anyway against the law. Okay. Another case that's discussed, which is a fairly common practice, is to rate. If you like mark your stuff up way high and then put it on sale, so you charge like three times the normal price and then mark it down 50%. And then people think they're getting a good deal. That's Ganeves Das. You're implying that it's a good deal when it's really not. People don't figure out what it normally costs and then realize that they're paying more at 50% off than its normal price. Yeah.
Product which was for $300, so you're getting 50% off, but they raised it much more.
Right. Fine. Another example: people hang up banners that say "going out of business for like 15 years." same thing. cheating on tests. So the poskim say that cheating on tests is kenevas das. You're giving a false impression as to how qualified you are. If you get a degree or a certification based on that falsehood, you're giving a false impression that you're that you're accredited or that you're qualified to do something. It's a problem. Testimonials and endorsements that are given only because they're paid for, athletes and things like that, who could care less about the product, but because they're getting millions of dollars, it's a serious problem. Something that's very practical. Amazon has this thing where if you give quality reviews, they tap you, and they send you free stuff to review it on condition that you review it, that you give good reviews, that they give thorough reviews on it. I assume, I might be wrong, I assume that if you give negative reviews, eventually they'll lose interest in you. So here you are. You know that if you keep provide, I assume, I don't know, but if you're providing good reviews, you're going to keep getting free stuff. So assuming that if the product's really good, it's really good. But if it's not, and you're kind of inclined to hide that or to certainly lie, then it's a problem. Another thing that I see a lot in advertising, I only started noticing when I was preparing this year, everybody writes in all their ads, most trusted in the business, most best this, most this, most that. If it's not true, it's Ganeva Das. It's not. There's something called puffery. That's what it's called, puffery. It could be. It's considered a normal practice in the field, and everyone says that. I don't know, but it's certainly not ideal, and it may be a problem to say that you're the best, the most, the cheapest. If you're not, then you can't. Then you shouldn't say. Pashas, you shouldn't. It's usher to say, and maybe it's just like something that people look at and they say it's ridiculous, and no one believes it. Which would maybe make it technically permissible, but not great. I just want to finish off with one case that happened to me. I don't know why the halacha is the way I heard it was, so you can think about this. Funny story. I was with my Rosh Yeshiva from Eretz Yisrael. We were in America going around collecting for the yeshiva. And he was going to Muncie for Shabbos, and I was going to drop him off in Muncie and go to the mountains to be with my in-laws. And so we got stuck in terrible traffic the whole way. And before we left, we picked up a beautiful bouquet of flowers for his host. And we got stuck in traffic, and we got to Muncie at candlelighting, or right before candlelighting. And so I didn't have time to make it to my in-laws. So I called, my in-laws had friends in Muncie, and we just like, I dropped my yeshiva off where he was staying, and I ran over to these random people I'd never met. And I realized I'd forgotten his flowers in the car. It was too late. It was like, Mamish Shabbos, I couldn't get back. So I had these flowers. I called my yeshiva and said, like, you want me to bring the flowers? He said, forget it, just give it to your host. So I brought this big bouquet of flowers to my host. And she called my mother-in-law. She says, you have to see the flowers that your son-in-law got for you. So I didn't say anything. Then I asked my yeshiva, was I a rasha for not saying anything? He said, no, it's fine. But I think he said it was fine. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why. Okay, shkaya.
Bring them in from the car.